It is 7 minutes after 1 o'clock Central Time, and this is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Jay Pearson for Celeste Quinn, and I just felt like I ought to go back to my roots in radio in the early 70s and shout something about the Champs and former hit Tequila and all that. But I refrained because we are not a top 40 radio station after all. But that theme song that we use for our Talk to the Meteorologist segment is, I guess, a top 40 oldie these days that is about the closest thing to top 40 you'll hear on this station. Instead of more platter, less chatter, we are more talk, less rock, I guess you would say. But top 40 radio was hip, it was boss, it was fast, it was furious, they played stacks of wax. It was called boss radio, color radio. People like the real Don Steele, Alan Freed, Wolfman Jack, Dick Biondi, Casey Kasem, Larry Lou Jack dominated the airwaves, and some say saved radio. We're going to talk about all of this with somebody who has chronicled Top 40 radio, who has been fascinated with Top 40 radio, who has, at least at one time, had some disparaging remarks for Top 40 radio, and who was an editor with Rolling Stone magazine, and has been a disc jockey on radio at KSAN, and worked for a number of different publications on a columnist basis, and is currently a curator for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museums, Library, and Archives. And I'm talking about Ben Fong-Torres. And Ben, welcome to the program today.
Welcome. You just had a shot of tequila on the JP Spree on Willpower Radio, WILL. There you go. A shot of top 40 for you, despite yourself.
The mighty 580.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, takes you right back to the old days.
I started at the River City Rocker. Cape Girardeau, Missouri, KGMO, where Rush Limbaugh came from, by the way.
It's funny how the voice changes immediately and automatically when you go into top 40 gear.
It's an amazing format. A lot of us grew up with it. Our technical director, Jason Croft, here is too young to have been back in the heyday of the 60s and even into the 70s of it. He came in more with the FM, more laid-back,
yes,
mellow, progressive AOR
right
thing. But yeah, I was really looking forward to this because I'm a child of Larry Lou Jack and Dick Biondi and Clark Weber and Barney Pipp and all of the guys in Chicago at WLS and WCFL. And it was a big part of my life. And as you point out, it was a huge part.
Yeah, and Chicago was a major, major market. And not unlike the San Francisco Bay Area, served as almost a, I wouldn't call it a minor league, but kind of a training ground to a certain extent for DJs went on to other markets and had great success.
Yeah.
And from top 40, there was one guy who, Jim Dunbar, was on WLS, and they were a prototypical top 40 station, and he escaped and came to San Francisco, became the program director of a mishmash of an AM station, KGO, which at one point even dabbled in top 40 and called themselves KGO Radio, and Jim became program director and took the station to number one, where it's been for the last 20-plus years.
Wow. It's an amazing format. It came along back in, what would you say, about 56, 57 or so?
Yes,
is when
right around
it
that time
really
frame.
Came about.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And before that, radio had played popular music.
Yes, on the lines of Your Hit Parade.
Yeah.
There were countdown shows and bandstand shows, pop music shows, DJ shows, but not that kind of format that came into place with the birth of Top 40.
So was that what it was? Was it more the format, the way it was all put together?
It was yes, it was the embracing of a music that was, at that time, not heard on a lot of mainstream stations. It was the intensifying of the format in terms of adding a more high-energy presentation. It was the rotation of records, where before it was just a variety of music from an album library and some hits. Now it was more centered on jukebox activity. It was what younger people were actively listening to and choosing to listen to and clearly wanted to listen to, and catering to that with a format that then also combined a lot of contests and station promotions local news. It was really an alternative form of radio back then, because radio at that time was mostly network radio and serials and comedies and the aforementioned music presentations.
Mm-hmm. And part of the reason for this, being credited with saving radio, and, you know, that could be a judgment call. I guess it's subjective. But television was coming into its own. And I suppose at that time, following a lot of a lot of the people who had been in radio and in the serials and otherwise were moving over to this new medium where they could, you know, be seen as well as heard, and there was a bright future and promise for it. And so a lot of radio stars in that type of broadcasting were going over to this new medium.
Right.
So radio was sitting there, especially network radio, I guess. What are we going to do now? But independent stations, ones that weren't just rebroadcasting network programming for the most part, had the flexibility to sit down and kind of help determine, well, you know, let's figure out what we're going to do, and develop their own personalities and started, I guess, as it goes today, playing the hits.
Yeah.
Still a popular thing to do, play
right.
the hits. What a concept, huh?
That's exactly what happened. It was pretty much TV forced the birth or the moving of radio into new directions. Mm-hmm. And in a way, localizing radio, too, whereas before you were really listening to network radio to hear the big stars of comedy and drama and suspense thrillers and Western serials, all of that. They had all gone to TV, and so now what could radio do? And they had to reinvent themselves.
All of this is chronicled, and I didn't mention it. We just got into the conversation. I'm sorry.
Okay.
The hits just keep on coming. The History of Top 40 Radio is your book,
yeah.
Which was written in 98 and updated in 2001. And it is put out by Backbeat Books. And it's one of several books that you have actually written about various aspects of music. And we'll be referring a lot to this book, fascinating reading, I have to say. And I could see where it would be, too, for people not just like me, of course, in the industry, and coming up on 30 years here. So I could relate to a lot of what you're saying, but it would be fascinating reading for anybody who wants to get behind the scenes and see how this all came about.
Yes.
And you know, what has propelled it? Top 40 Radio is still here today.
Right.
It still exists, and if you want to hear it in this town, I'll go ahead and say Q96 is the top 40 station in town. WQTV.
That's probably the closest thing to it.
Yeah.
In terms of the old-style formatics, you would have to probably go to other formats now.
Mm-hmm.
For example, oldies radio quite often will hire disc jockeys from that era, and this and the format will include the old-style jingles and mm-hmm. that kind of talking over at the beginning of records.
Yeah, and you could, yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, that's a good point, because the modern incarnation would be Q96. Oldies 92 would be the more traditional, the way radio sounded in the 60s. They even,
right.
I believe, and I haven't listened to them for a while, but they used to even have reverb behind the voices still.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so. Echo chambers.
Yeah.
And doesn't Dick Biondi still work some oldies radio?
Dick Biondi is still doing the afternoon shift, I believe it is, at WJMK in Chicago.
Yes. Right.
And John Landecker is still doing the morning.
Yes. Well, Dick Biondi, who obviously, I don't need to say this, is a legend in your mm-hmm. area, and he also spent some time on the West Coast in Los Angeles at KRLA, mm-hmm. was gracious enough to be one of the 16 legendary disc jockeys who are included in this CD that mm-hmm. I produced to include in the book. And so people who, like your engineer, are too young to know what these people sounded like, but heard about Alan Freed and Murray the K and Dick Biondi and so many others, get a chance to hear a snippet, at least, of their
yeah.
work.
Let's hear some of Dick Biondi. We do have the CD here, and we have it queued up to Dick Biondi, who was at WJMK now, but I guess his and he came out of Buffalo. And
yeah, KBW.
I guess he really hit his big time and made his big impression and imprint in Chicago at WLS, and I imagine a lot of people remember him. Let's listen.
Here's the screamer, Dick Biondi, the king of Chicago radio.
It's a good time for the good sound of music with Dick Biondi.
Well, happy guys here at WLS. We're 3 years old today. Do you realize that? Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Leonard Goldenson, you Fink chairman of ABC. Happy birthday to all the jerky bosses.
It was a little bit of Dick Biondi. And he, yeah, I guess he epitomizes the kind of a, well, he was kind of a rebel.
Yeah.
But the fun side of what this was all about, and I think the presentation of radio changed a lot with Top 40 because it just sounded like these guys were having a blast.
That's right. And although they were young adults, most of them, and professional announcers, they often reflected the feeling of the younger listeners in their audience by the rebelliousness, the ticking off against their own bosses, which would be like your going up against your teacher in school, but also going up against the advertisers and messing with the advertising copy or talking over the advertising or singing along with it or rebutting it or, well, you know, whatever, using advertising as fodder for comedy bits, which is certainly unheard of these days,
mm-hmm.
except perhaps by Howard Stern.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or Rick Dees, I guess, is still going strong.
You have to have the power to do that.
Yeah. Ben Fong-Torres is who you're listening to, and he's the author of The Hits Just Keep On Coming, which is the history of Top 40 radio, and it's available on Backbeat Books, and there is a CD, and you just heard a little bit of Dick Biondi from the CD of air checks that he was able to collect from some of the big names in Top 40 radio. Alan Freed is on there, Gary Owens, who a lot of people will remember from Laugh-In but don't know about everything else that he was into before that, is one of the more respected Top 40 disc jockeys. Casey Kasem, how he got his start. Tom Donahue. And others are on here, the real Don Steele, Robert W. Morgan, Rick Dees is on there, Scott Shannon. We'll talk about some of these people as we go. But I do want to invite listeners to call in if you have a memory, a fond memory about Top 40 radio, or you want to dig into some of, you know, how it was done, how it was put together. It didn't just happen. It was planned. And 333-9455 is our number in Champaign-Urbana. That's 333-WILL. And if you're calling long distance, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. And you can feel free to join in the conversation anytime. Ben, let's go back. I want to mention beyond some of the disc jockeys, because people have heard of Alan Freed probably. He had a rather tragic ending of his life. Of course,
yeah.
Dick Clark we've heard of, Wolfman Jack, Dick Biondi, and so many others. And we can talk about some of the disc jockeys and listen to some more, but I want to get back into where this concept came about. Who came up with the idea of putting this package together that we call Top 40 Radio, as opposed to, like, you know, the hit parade or just the traditional mm-hmm. countdown of popular music.
Who, right. The credit, by and large, goes to a guy named Todd Storrs, who was part of a family that owned a number of stations in the Midwest. And he tinkered with a couple of stations in Omaha, Nebraska, and New Orleans. And those were the stations on which the Top 40 format is said to have been given birth. Depending on which legend you listen to, you can trace it back to a time when there was a show called the Top 20 at 12:20 or something. I forget the call letters and frequencies right now, having not looked at the book in a little while. But basically, there was a show of that kind of hit parade mentality that someone in the Storrs chain heard and said, hey, that could be a good concept. Let's do the same thing. We'll call it Top 40 at 1440 because that's our station dial location. And somewhere along the way, it is said that Todd Storrs and one of his programmers, I think his name was Bill Stewart, mm-hmm. were in a bar across the street from their Omaha station. And they spent apparently a good amount of time at that bar or restaurant that day and observed jukebox activity, and by hearing what was being played on the jukebox, discovered that the teenagers themselves were putting certain songs in high rotation. They couldn't get enough of certain songs. And they thought if there is that much of an affection for a certain song, then that they do want to hear them that often, don't get tired of them, that might work for a radio station. And so the combination of the top 40 countdown and the jukebox rotation and the young audience led to the first experimentations of the format that became known as Top 40. Mm-hmm. Todd Storrs was known. I think he was called by, he was profiled in Time magazine back in the late 50s as a guy with a particular penchant for station promotion. He loved concocting contests and doing things that would bring attention to his radio stations by way of DJ stunts, contests and promotions, and local newscasts covering the local area, covering high schools, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
He was matched to a certain extent, I think, by Gordon McClendon, working out of Texas. And he had also a couple of radio stations. And he is credited also with making those stations high profile by way of station promotions and with being a pioneer with jingles, a jingle that had been sung to support commercials and, to a lesser extent, the opening and closing themes of radio shows from back in the 40s and 50s now were being made to promote the station itself. And that is credited to the music director of a McClendon station in Texas, a guy named Bill Meeks. And he and his stable of staff musicians began coming up with jingles. And that became part of the Top 40 format, a major part of it.
Now, he had KLIF radio down there.
Yes.
And later, KNUS, when he, it was on the FM site. He,
right.
He,
no, McClendon was a true
back, but,
pioneer of many different formats on radio, from the obvious that had not been done before, like here in San Francisco, Oakland, he took over a station and turned it into cable, KABL, and produced beautiful music, they called it, I guess, middle-of-the-road, instrumental, lush music, but again, promoted in such a creative way that it, you know, it was done like a Top 40 station with lots of local presence.
Yeah, and he had WNUS, which was one of the early all-news stations Chicago.
Where he stumbled was one time in Los Angeles. He tried an all-classified ad.
All-classified K-ads.
Yeah, I didn't quite catch
that. I can only imagine what that sounded like. I've done plenty of those call-in trading shows in my life, but you could imagine that all day. I used to listen to WNUS when it was all news. They had the teletype going underneath in the background. I remember that. And my oldest brother worked for Bart McClendon, Gordon's son, down at K-News, KNUS in Dallas for a while when they were trying to do Top 40 on FM. An experiment that he had some success with, but not sustaining, I guess. So we have some phone calls, and why don't we go to line one and see who's there to talk to our guest, Ben Fong-Torres, if we might. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello. I'm enjoying the show. I grew up in Chicago and listened to WLS and WCFL, and I was wondering if you remember Chicken Man.
Dick Orkin
did that.
Ben, you remember that?
Oh, no, I don't know Dick Orkin.
The Chicken Man series was Dick Orkin, who was in Chicago. WCFL, I believe, is where he started that in the 60s. I could embarrass myself and
day.
Do the thing, but yeah. You want me to? Jason wants me to.
Oh, you can do it?
Bark, 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 bark! Chicken Man! You know, was that about close?
That's it. And then I remember when my older sister started saying it was bubblegum stations because FM came on, and they switched to FM radio and were listening to that. That's if you were cool,
yeah.
Which I, of course, wasn't yet.
So in Chicago, you had to listen to, when FM started, it was kind of underground-ish.
Yeah.
WLS-FM was an underground station for a while, one of the early pioneers in that. So. Cool. Well, Chicken Man, yeah. Yep. That was Dick Orkin, and he has a thing called, it's a creative ad. You hear their ads still. I think it was called Radio Ranch, I think is what they called it.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
I'll watch for it. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call. I think the Chicken Man series has been re-released. But it was the greatest crime fighter in the world. It was just a little bit thing that was part of the Top 40 thing.
Sure. And DJs quite often would take their bits with them from market to market, you know. And so and of course there were people who plagiarized bits from other disc jockeys. There were programmers who plagiarized entire formats and approaches and jingle packages. So there was a lot of copying and duplicating going on back then.
Yeah, I want to talk about that because you'd mentioned Todd Storrs and we talked about Gordon McClendon, but there was a guy named Bill Drake who was a big influence on the Top 40 format as it coalesced, and
he was the guy who mainstreamed it, basically.
Right.
He really pared it down to the essentials. This is in the mid-60s. Before him was a guy who had equal success doing the exact opposite, which was color radio invented by Chuck Bloor.
Right.
And he's one who for example, guided the careers of Casey Kasem and Gary Owens, who were both on his stations. But, Chuck has success with KEWB, KFWB in Los Angeles, KDWB in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul. And then Bill Drake came along. Now, with Chuck, it was long, seductive jingles that were almost mini-songs done in the style of Leonard Bernstein, jazzy, up-tempo, or very low-key and relaxing, almost like, almost like acid jazz. From back in the late 50s, early 60s, DJs did long bits and really had a chance to express themselves and create characters and an ensemble of people as part of their show. With Bill Drake, it was more music, less talk, get it over with, but you know, we'd also want you to have some personality that you can work in over the beginnings of the songs and in other places that doesn't impede the flow of constant music.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the real Don Steele and Robert W. Morgan and others came to the fore.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so successful in Los Angeles, where Boss Radio was presented in May of 65, that soon dozens, if not hundreds, of stations around the country emulated the Bill Drake presentation.
Right. And that was was first at a Top 40 station in the mid-1970s. They still followed that format.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of jingles. You were never, ever, 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 ever supposed to be talking if there wasn't music under you.
Uh-huh.
And, boy, I got to tell you, that was a lesson in being brief and to the point.
Yes.
And not wasting your words because you didn't get much time. You got
right.
3 or 4 seconds or 10 seconds here or there.
Yeah.
Unless a song came along like... oh, gosh, what was the song back then that they would have one of these 30-second intros that you could do the whole weather forecast over and
oh,
say
yeah,
a couple
like
of funny things?
Or, Liberty Mountain High.
Yeah.
Or
I think Boz Scaggs' Lowdown was one that had about a 30-second introduction. And
sure.
You actually got 30 seconds to talk. And it
yeah.
was,
right. And the jingles themselves were no more than 3 seconds.
Yeah, right.
That was the other thing. Was with Chuck Bloor, the jingles could go for a minute and a half to
yeah.
tell you the weather was coming up. And with Boss Radio was 93KHJ weather, and you're on.
And then you were there.
Yeah.
Exactly. Let's take another phone call at 333-9455. And you're on the air. Go ahead, please. Line 2.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Hi.
How are you?
I have to remember to say what line it is because you don't know who I'm talking to, do you, unless I say that. Line 2.
Go ahead.
It's you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm traveling across the state, you know, I'm on my way from Cincinnati to California. I just happened to be picking up your radio station, and it really struck me interesting because I used to be stationed in the Air Force years ago in Niagara Falls, New York, and that was where Dick Biani first got his start. And we used to listen to him almost every night on the radio there. In fact, he was at the time, he was very approachable. You could talk to him and, you know, meet him after the show and stuff like that because he wasn't real famous at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, We used to listen to him a lot and talk to him and had quite a time with him. I was really surprised to hear he's still in the business.
Well, you know, back in the early days, especially, and, you know, it depends on the personality of the person you're talking about. With Mr. Biondi, he happens to be a fairly open, giving guy. But I think it was part of the job description that you would be available to go to high schools and do sock hops and make TV appearances and leave your phone lines open if you are format included, taking requests and doing dedications. Remember those shows, usually the late night shows when kids were supposed to be doing their homework, instead they were calling the disc jockey and talking with them. And that really was part of the territory. And so they were used to being out there in public and meeting their listeners and giving away records and, you know, that kind of stuff. So not a surprise.
Great. Well, thanks for the call, and safe travels to you. Thanks for dialing us up. 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455 if you want to talk with us and reminisce about Top 40 Radio or ask some questions about the industry. Ben Fong Torres, who is the author of The Hits, Just Keep On Coming, The History of Top 40 Radio, and he was an editor with Rolling Stone magazine, and I guess back in those days you had written some rather disparaging words about Top 40 Radio.
Probably just words, because I never wrote about Top 40 itself. I know that Tom Donahue, in one of the first issues of Rolling Stone, wrote the most disparaging essay about Top 40, using words like the stinking, rotten, you know, corpse of Top 40 Radio,
right,
stinking up the airwaves, and he had no use for it because he was leaving it and had created helped create underground radio at KMPX in San Francisco. With me, it was clearly an attitudinal thing where I turned my back. Your previous listener was talking about that, how now with FM, to be cool, you had to be listening to the more laid-back, more human presentation, the more free-form approach of FM radio. And with Rolling Stone, clearly the line was drawn between AM and FM. It was like us and them. And so although I loved Top 40, as many of us did at the magazine when we were kids, now we had grown up and we were into a different world, and that was best reflected and chronicled by FM radio. And so, yes, when I had reason to mention certain stations on the AM dial, even ones I had listened to as a kid, I would usually broad brush them as being teeny bopper or bland, or, you know, not of great merit or depth. But in a way, that was true, because as FM took over the presentation of rock and roll, AM kind of stayed stuck to the format as it had for the previous 10 years. Let's say we begin in 1956. Well, in the mid-60s, it still sounded exactly the same. They were still doing much of the cornball shtick. They were still shouting and yelling. The jingles still sounded about the same. There were lots more commercials on AM than FM. And so it was a fat, easy target to disparage what was still going on the Top 40 dial.
Mm-hmm.
When you had this clear alternative that really spoke to you if you were growing up at a certain time and beginning to feel certain ways about what rock and roll was and could be. So it was a natural thing for me to do, although in my book, of course, I kind of call myself to task for being such a traitor to Top 40.
I know you did.
Rolling Stone.
Well, it sounds like in your heart you really had a soft spot for it, but, you know, it was your job to be hip with a Rolling Stone magazine. And, you know, you had to do what you had to do, I guess. I want to mention somebody before we go on, and I want to listen to some Gary Owens so Jason
sure
can get Gary, because you were talking about shtick, and I think he was one of the kings of shtick.
Yeah.
In the book, you mentioned somebody who was one of, in some of the surveys, the biggest jocks in L.A., Bill Balance.
Yeah.
And he went on to prominence in L.A. He had a syndicated program in 1970 called Feminine Forum, which was, I guess, one of the first sex talk shows.
Right.
But you mentioned, and I don't know if anybody remembers listening to this radio station back in 1936, but you mentioned that he began by doing those 15-minute newscasts on the college station at University of Illinois. That's got to be this station. Because we were the only ones on the air in 1936.
Right.
In this town.
Amazing. And he doesn't have a plaque on the wall there in the studio?
I don't know. And I, you know, honestly, I've had meetings all morning. I didn't have time to go and talk to some of the people that might remember him. But the WILL turns 80 next month. It's one of the oldest stations arguably the oldest one in Illinois. So, in other words,
Dr. Laura has you guys to blame.
Yeah.
For all of her problems with her naked pictures.
Sure.
There you go.
But 1936 would have, it would have had to have been WILL. I wonder if anybody remembers Bill Balance from WILL back then. And there probably is a transcription in the archive someplace.
I would go to the Alumni Association or the Journalism Department and do a little research. That'd be fun to know.
Yeah, that would be fun. Maybe I can do that and get back to you on that.
Another way is just to call Bill Balance and ask him.
Well, I guess it would, if he's still, that would be that'd be something fun to do.
Thanks.
So let's listen, and I'll give out the numbers again if anybody wants to join the conversation, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455 if you have a reminiscence about Top 40 Radio. We're going to talk about some of what went on behind the scenes to propel this and some of the social implications of this in a minute, but... Ben, you brought up some of the shtick, and I think that a lot of us identify with Gary Owens from Laugh-In.
Right.
He's,
the voice of many cartoons that are still on the air.
And even a Gary Owens cartoon.
Oh, yes, yes. And that is correct. And he does commercial voices. He's still on the air doing a format called Music of Your Life.
Mm-hmm.
Just the sweetest, greatest guy. But when I met him, he was in his early 20s. And had come in from, I think, St. Louis, maybe KMOK, and took over the market here in San Francisco. Not easy to do because we were dominated by a fellow named Don Sherwood playing middle-of-the-road music on KSFO, the number one station in town.
Yeah.
And in came Gary Owens on the Top 40 station, and this is what he sounded like.
All right, let's listen.
I want to be the king of love.
Fabian, who gave up his woman for a crown today at 2 minutes past 8 KEWB Summer Fun Time, here on the wealthy and justly unpopular Lychee Nut Grower Gary Owens program from now till 9 on KEWB number 1.
Take your vacation this summer. Tell your mom and dad to drive carefully.
KEWB.
Good degrees, San Francisco, East Bay 55, overscattering this morning and in western portions of San Francisco all day, but clear inland this afternoon, high between 60 and 76 KEWB degrees. Temporary foster homes are needed for children of mixed nationality backgrounds. All expenses for their care will be paid to the qualifying foster parents. Today, phone Preston Foster, Temple Bar 62526 or Weld Walnut 10665 with more music more often. Jackie Wilson on KEWB.
All right, a little of what Gary Owen sounded like in action at KEWB.
What a voice, huh?
Oh, man. Yeah, I think a lot of people, and I teach in the journalism department here, too, and we get into a little bit of the performance end, and you still, people still want to have that style, that
cupping voice. Their ear. And
yeah,
talking,
I don't know why it just could, you know, even though we've been into FM, laid back, mellow, be yourself, conversational for years, people still... You know, they get that cup your ears, stand at the big microphone and the big studio thing going.
That's right.
And I was guilty of that, I'm sure. You know, when I started,
it's the play acting. That's the fun of it.
Stand up and shout at the mic, you know. I mean, we weren't allowed to sit down where I started. You had to stand up.
Yeah, Jay, when I was on FM radio on KSAN, you know, I would play a lot of Top 40 music. Mm-hmm. I would play medleys of Motown classics and, you know, hits of the day, the Bee Gees, and whatever. We could, because it was free form, I could mix in, you know, the corniest music along with the so-called hippest. And I would so often want to talk over the beginning of the record because that's how I grew up and enjoyed doing that in the privacy of my own home and car. But on the radio, I just couldn't on FM. So it's good to be able to do it again.
Can't do it on FM. No,
yes.
No, you couldn't do it. Couldn't talk over the music. The music you know, for itself. What about the social implications of this? Top 40 Radio, there were songs, some country songs, and there were some R&B stations and some others that were probably hipper than the traditional middle of the road, as we called them, variety stations that catered a little bit to everybody at the time. But Top 40 Radio seemed to be a soundtrack of a generation that didn't have an identifiable soundtrack at that time.
Well, that is certainly true because as we said, you know, we traced it back to the jukebox revolution or phenomenon of kids, by and large, plugging in their nickels to hear whatever they wanted to. And back then, there wasn't the kind of more rigid labeling and categorization of music. And so Top 40 Radio was driven by not only pop music and the beginnings of rock and roll, which then, of course, brought in rhythm and blues, but also by country and folk and straight-out blues and novelty records. You know, you would have the Chipmunks or the Witch Doctor or Purple People Eater. And you would have, on one occasion, I heard this from a panel discussion that we put together after the book came out, in which I think it was Chuck Bloor, who's talked about the immense power of radio stations to make hits. And he said that one reason that in the late 50s, the Mormon Tabernacle Choir had a top 10 hit with the Battle Hymn of the Republic was that a program director, just on a lark, decided to see whether he could make a hit out of the most unlikely possible song. And he did.
The Singing Nun.
The Singing Nun. I mean, you wonder how can it be that, you know, Roger Miller and Gladys Knight and the Pips,
right,
and Harry Belafonte doing Banana Boat Song, and Shep Woolley doing the Purple People Eater, and Lawrence Welk doing Perfidia would all be in the top 40 in the same week.
Yeah.
Not to mention Chuck Berry and Fats Domino and Little Richard and Elvis Presley.
Right, just, you know, such wide differences. But I think you hit on something right there, that while Top 40 Radio did reflect this generation and its taste, it also played a big role in shaping it, because it did have such power to influence, wouldn't you say?
Well, yes, the impact was on many different levels, you know. It was not only in terms of the diversity of music and the bringing together of kids through the telephone. You know, these dedications and requests was a new kind of interactivity that young people had never had before with a medium. And that kind of opened the way to the democratization of the process. It was no longer just the entertainers feeding you one way. Now it was a two-way kind of communication. And between the local news and DJ Patter, you had the beginnings of a kind of a community bulletin board, which certainly exploded with FM, in that with FM radio and with the changing social and cultural movement of that time, and now we're talking about the late 60s, the FM disc jockeys and newscasts became really the rallying point for a lot of different groups and organizations and communities. And so, yes, I mean, the impact is just immense.
Mm-hmm. Who would you say of the people that were behind the scenes, the Todd Storrs, Bill Drake, Gordon McClendon, Chuck Bloor, and we haven't even scratched the surface on Bill Gavin and his influence,
sure,
yet.
Sure,
Rick
Millar in
New York.
We need
to do that, yeah. But who was the most influential? Or can you pick one?
It's hard to pick one. It depends on whether it's influence on radio itself or on music or you know, DJs or whatever. But I would say that Bill Drake has to be way up there for the changes that he put Top 40 through, the mainstreaming of it, that probably in part helped to trigger the alternative, the FM revolution. And then, of course, he jumped on that boat as well in New York with ORFM, WORFM, and you know, carried on with a successful reign on both bands of AM and FM. But his lieutenants, a chief among them, Ron Jacobs, who was the program director at Boss Radio, KHJ in Los Angeles, who was about to publish his own memoirs for the first time, 37 years after the fact, they triggered so much copycatting around the country that has to be a major influence. And then, in turn, their inspiration of the exact opposite of with FM created yet another major impact on society and on music, on the industry. So I would bring it down to Bill Drake.
Bill Drake. What about Bill Gavin's influence? Gavin was one of the first to do research into what records were being requested, being played on radio stations, give programmers a lot of good information besides just what was being sold at record stores.
Right, he himself was a performer, a guitar player and vocalist, who back in the 20s and 30s, radio would employ staff musicians. And so he had a job on various local stations doing that, being the staff singer, just as Merv Griffin did back in the 40s on KFRC in San Francisco. And Bill became a programmer, a consultant to a countdown show that was sponsored by Lucky Lager, a beer company. And the show was, in a way, syndicated in its own way to about 11 stations along the West Coast. And he decided at one point he was beginning to get information from the various local program directors of what was successful, and he decided to share that information with a wider group of programmers around the country if they wanted to subscribe to a newsletter he decided to put together. So it was, in a way, the first top 40 survey. There were, of course, hit parades and Billboard and Cashbox and other publications were around calculating, tabulating, and publishing popularity charts, but Bill was the first to do it from the radio programmer's point of view of their assessment of their own local markets, what was getting response on the telephones and record shop sales, and there was a new kind of counting of what was not only popular, but what might be on its way. And that became very valuable to a lot of programs to be able to look around the corner and say, aha, this song is coming, is popular in Milwaukee and Detroit, and therefore might be popular here in Portland. That kind of thing began with Bill Gavin's tip sheet, you could call it, I suppose. He called it Bill Gavin's Record Report for the first years. And beyond you know, just the listing of popularity rankings, what he really did for the industry was that as it began to become a format and a major part of the industry, he was also the conscience of the industry. You know, he always implored programmers and DJs to adhere to the highest tenets of broadcasting, going back to the beginnings of the what we all learned in broadcasting classes, that the FCC was saying that license holders should be doing, you know, catering to the public interest and being responsible broadcasters and offering balanced viewpoints and offering news and community affairs broadcasting as well as entertainment. All of that, Bill Gavin continually pounded into the young programmers of the day. Mm-hmm. So he really was a conscience of the industry.
And the Gavin Report continues to this day. It's still a big deal to be reporting.
They're having their gathering in San Francisco this week, and I have the honor of conducting an on-stage interview with Willie Nelson.
Oh, great!
As part of that, and you know, here talk about a rebel who has had to work without radio airplay for most of his career, and succeeded in spite of it. He should have a few sharp words for where radio is at these days, as well as the record industry.
I bet. I had a chance to interview him back in, I think it was 1980. Spent an hour with him, and it was just it was wonderful.
Oh yeah, he's amazing.
Wonderful. He is an amazing guy. Still is. Let's take another phone call, and it's on line 4. Hi, where are you calling from?
Normal.
Okay.
I'm 60 years old, and I grew up with Top 40 Radio. I'm enjoying the program a lot. I'll just mention a couple of disc jockeys and a couple of stations. There's a tape called The Cruising that has a lot of, an hour of various DJs. Most of them are in the late 50s. But I've heard a lot of rock and roll DJs around the country. And I think my favorite, as being the best, was a guy by the name of Joe Niagara out of WIBG of Philadelphia.
Wibbitch.
Yeah, Wibbitch. I don't know if the author has ever heard him or has snippets of him on the CD, but he'd get my vote as the best rock and roll DJ of the late 50s.
Joe Niagara. Ben, you ever heard of him?
I spoke with Mr. Niagara for the book, so he is represented in there.
Yeah.
And yes, he also did one of the Cruising albums. What it was Ron Jacobs, the aforementioned Ron Jacobs programmer at KHJ, and a partner came up with this idea of recreating some of the classic DJ shows of the mid-50s into the mid-60s. And I think they initially did about 10 albums. And for each one, they would pick a year from 55 to about 65, I think it went, and picked a disc jockey representing some part of the country. So it was widespread, and you had Jack Carney out of St. Louis.
Right, Jack Carney was 58, and Biondi was the early 60s.
Uh-huh, and Joe Niagara represented...
Joe Niagara represented 57.
A great, enthusiastic delivery. Wasn't he the Rockin' Bird?
Rockin' Bird, I think. Well, that's what you said in the book.
Yeah, okay, the Rockin' Bird. And we spoke, and he was great. He had a lot of friends in the business, and he knew everybody else, and, you know, a true salesman of himself and of his product and of his station. And he was still working when I spoke with him back in the, a few years ago. He was doing oldies radio, too.
Oh, he's still doing oldies.
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
Hey, once you do it, you know, the pipes are the last to go. The vocal cords always still sound good.
Yeah, well, that Cruisin' 57 is, he's my favorite.
And, yeah, great. So these disc jockeys went into a recording studio, and where they could, they grabbed old jingles and cleaned them up and recreated the old commercials of that year, and then picked about, cleared about 10 or 12 songs, and did a DJ show, just
right,
like they did from, you know, 30 years before. That was fantastic to hear.
Yeah, that was my comment. Thanks a lot.
Great. Well, thanks a lot for the call. Yeah, and there are a lot on the CD here that you have. We ought to pick one out, because we only have about five more minutes. Can't believe this hour is going by so fast. But... I don't know, who should we listen to? Rick Dees?
I wouldn't choose Rick Dees, because what I got from him was sort of a sampler thing of him on the telephone doing stuff.
Yeah.
It wasn't really classic Top 40 stuff.
Yeah.
Scott,
well, I didn't know if we were listening to
somebody more contemporary.
Because
he sounds so different than he does now in New York. If you hear the first part, just the first little bit of his track.
All right, let's do a little of that, because this is from WMAK Nashville in the mid 70s. So
there we go.
It's kind of an interesting perspective of what Top 40 sounded like getting into the mid 70s with Scott Shannon, which, by the way, I did pick out before I saw the corrections in the back that you called that station WMAQ.
Yes.
So I was reading. But Scott Shannon from his days in Nashville in the mid-1970s.
Middle Tennessee with 5,000 watts of fun power. This is WMAK Nashville.
A member of the ever-growing Mooney Broadcasting Corporation.
7:30 in the New Critic Capital City with your
signing on the air, this is WHTZ.
And that's a little bit of getting into the 80s for the WHTZ. But
about being a fan of what Bill Drake was doing in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And so he would somehow manage to get tapes or whatever sent to him so he could study the
format
and emulate it in his own basement at home, you know, using old records and stuff and trying to be a DJ.
That's exactly what I sounded like in 1975, by the way.
Wow.
No, I didn't. I didn't come anywhere close to that. I was like 19 years old, and I was just trying to figure out how to do it. I was pretty surprised I got the job I did.
Wow.
I was doing morning drive at the Top 40.
With high energy?
Station. Oh, God, yeah. We had this thing. You couldn't talk unless the music, you know, I mean, it was the whole nine yards, the short jingles, and just jamming all the time. The River City Rock and Roll. We were the rock of Missouri.
It's okay, Jay. You can shout.
And, you know, when you did the news, we did like a three-minute news thing. We had Howard Cosell. There was something like every 3 minutes there was something going on.
Oh, yeah.
And I was on the air from 6 till 10.
And were you a combo engineer?
Oh, yeah. Did everything out of a... And the radio station was in a Quonset hut.
Yeah.
And you had to do everything.
Sounds like Wolfman Jack,
Irving
Graffiti, only having to run the board himself.
It was a lot like that back in those days. And then you'd leave, you know, thinking you were the hottest thing going. And, you know, then I'd drive an hour and go back to school.
Yeah.
I had to drive down and do the show and then go to school. And I was exhausted. And that's what you point that out. This the business of doing that, you did an hour at, wasn't it, with Turi Ryder?
Oh, yeah, KFRC.
Or KFRC.
Right.
Yeah, she was in Chicago for a while.
Yes, she was, for quite a while.
But,
and that was amazing. That was just so much fun to actually get onto a classic radio station. It was near the end of its run at the Top 40 station, but still it was fun to just talk over the music. And I had to do a talk-up of Papa Don't Preach by Madonna. Talk about a long one. That's about 30, 35 seconds.
What did you talk about?
What, over 35 seconds? Oh, I just did a joke about how I always wanted to talk up radio and have a chance to come from GQ, where I'm writing a column about Top 40, and to be here at this radio station, and blah, 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 and I hit the post and ended it just as the vocal began.
So then just kind of, because we got to kind of end up here, but they ended up offering you a weekend gig out of that, but then changed formats?
Yeah. Ain't that the way of radio?
Darn.
Oh, I lost my job before I got it.
Oh,
so, there you go.
This has been a fast hour, but what I would do is refer people to the book. It's on Backbeat Books, but it's The Hits Just Keep On Coming, The History of Top 40 Radio. Ben Fong, Fong-Torres, T-O-R-R-E-S, is the author and who we've been talking to this hour. And, boy, I tell you, you know, you can talk forever about this. I guess Top 40 Radio, if you had to sum something up right now, it's still around. It's an enduring format. Is it always going to be here in some form, do you think?
In some form, yes. The democracy is gone. You know, you have everything segmented, but the energy is still there. You just have to kind of go look for it.
Yeah. All right. Well, in town, if you want to hear what it sounds like in its latest incarnation, which includes a little rappy, hippy, hoppy stuff once in a while, but still the general jingles, jocks, talking over the beginnings of songs and stuff, you can listen to Oldies 92 or Q96. Probably are the two examples the new incarnation of it on Q96, the old one on Oldies 92.
Yeah. If I may suggest, for the real fans of the old-time radio, the way it was, you go to online to Real Radio, spelled R-E-E-L, radio, one word, .com, and you will find a vast archive of air checks of all these disc jockeys and many others through the years, all for free.
And I will put in a plug for that site, too, because I've spent many, many an hour browsing through there in the links.
And I have a collection up there now because of my book.
Great. Well, I'll have to look for that. I'll have to get on tonight and look for that.
Great, Jay.
Ben, it's been great talking to you.
Same here.
And good luck with whatever you're into now, with the Rock and Roll Museum and Hall of Fame.
All kinds of stuff. Willie Nelson this week on stage.
With Willie this week.
Robbie Robertson next month at the South by Southwest.
Oh, great.
I'm also co-anchor of the Chinese New Year Parade here, the TV broadcast this weekend.
Great.
So, Gong Hei Fa Choi to you, because I am Chinese.
There you go. That's right. That's right. Well,
who knew?
Who knew? Not in this hour anyway, but...
Right.
We'll catch up with you down the road somewhere, man.
A pleasure, Jay.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Ben Fong-Torres, who is the author of The Hits Just Keep On Coming.